As is pretty typical on this podcast, some news broke after Will and I recorded today, and we talked a lot about the Jets' GM situation, which you will hear in a second. But the Jets traded linebacker Darren Lee to the Chiefs for a sixth-round pick. Basically, Adam Gase, still pissed off at John Elway, gives away an underperforming but super talented linebacker to the Broncos' greatest threat this season, the Kansas City Chiefs. Lee, the Jets declined his fifth-year option, so he's basically on a one-year deal with the Chiefs for a sixth-rounder. Adam Gase, their new GM, did make the trade today, so I'm sure I'll talk more about the Darren Lee situation when I break down the Jets offseason, but that happened after we recorded. So I thought, fuck it, I will take out my phone sitting on my bouncy ball here, and I'll just record the news. Read it straight to your fucking ears, and you'll like it. Because, I don't know if you'll like it. Oh, God, I'm too confident. Okay, welcome to the That's Good Sports Podcast. We really want to be here today. I'm Brandon Perna with Will Keys.
What's going on, Brandon? I heard you threw your name in the ring, your hat in the ring, I guess, for GM of the New York Jets.
Yeah, my name is officially in the ring via 5 points vids on YouTube. So we'll see what happens.
Expecting a call back anytime soon?
My phone is on.
Okay.
My phone is on. I think I could do it.
Look, I mean, all like television personalities are getting hired. I get it. They used to play football too. Not as important. But I think once all like the television personalities have been hired in the front offices, the next logical step is to go to the internet.
Go to YouTube. Go to YouTube to run your organization.
I can't think of how that would possibly go wrong.
No, me neither. The great thing about me being GM is I have no relationships with any of the other NFL GMs. So
you're going in to drain the swamp. You're an outsider.
Right.
Now that I think about it, I want Eat That Pussy to be the GM of the Eagles.
I think, oh man, that would be entertaining.
Imagine his press conferences like after the draft.
He should just be their press conference guy.
Yeah. No,
I think every team should have a fan that gets to be their press conference person.
Yeah, like a press secretary.
Yes.
Like perfect. In the White House.
Perfect.
We
could all be like Sarah Huckabee's or whoever the fuck right. It is.
Yeah.
Anyway,
honestly.
Today we will talk about the Jets firing their GM in May. They fired their GM in May. Who might be filling in that role? The Patriots signed Jamie Collins back. XFL still looking to Tim Tebow for his services. And then we've got Broncos news. We've got no news disguised as Broncos news that we're going to get into it. Joe Flacco, he is not mentoring anybody anytime soon. And there's, Will Keys and I started this podcast last May-ish, right?
I think so. It's been about a year. About.
So this is our time to shine, Will. The less news we have to actually discuss, the more we
better. Yeah, it gets better. I just like to point out that you never mentored me either. So
right.
Like, good I've become.
I didn't. it was like, hey, can you write some articles for me? And then the website went to shit because promises get broken all the time on the internet. And I was like, well, can you just write videos for me? And you're like, sure. What do you want me to write?
I don't know. Stuff.
Think about something.
Yeah.
Something good.
It worked out, I think.
It does. Now we have a relationship. I think you get what I need, and I give you very little direction or help still, and we managed to get videos produced.
Totally symbiotic.
I would, if I were Will, I would hate trying to write for me. For a lot of reasons. Mostly because I'll just ask Will at any time, like, hey, can you do this video with me? And usually you say yes, unless you're like, I am not at home because I went to San Francisco to watch a basketball game or whatever you do in San Francisco.
Look, man, do the police complain when they get a phone call?
No.
Imagine that the police just have like a direct line to 911 in their cop cars, and that's how crimes get solved.
That's right.
I don't really know anything about civics or anything, but no. I imagine.
I listened to a podcast about the Zodiac Killer. So San Francisco police, they're all tied in now.
Never did find him.
Nope, never did, never probably will.
Probably very dead.
Probably dead. But that's a different rabbit hole we don't want to go down right now, I don't think.
Not today, at least. Not today.
Maybe. Before we get into the NFL, I've watched more basketball recently than I have over the last probably 5 years. Two questions for you.
Okay.
One, we can get into the draft lottery that just happened because you have an interesting theory there. Mm-hmm. But my real question is, how do you still watch basketball with the officiating? Because as bad as NFL officiating can be, I feel like NBA officiating is like 10 times as frustrating. Does it, over time, do you feel like it kind of like balances itself out? Or are you just prepared for it to piss you off every time an important game is happening?
Well, you're speaking to a fan who hasn't like witnessed like a really important game basically in his entire life. Although I have been on the bad side of some like blatantly illegal officiating, like officiating that people went to jail for.
Oh, shit.
So I am like pretty opinionated on the subject, but you just have to like, it's never going to balance out depending on what, you know,
team you're root for.
But you have to pretend that it does basically, or else you're just never going to enjoy the sport.
Yeah. It was interesting to watch, I think, as somebody who hasn't watched the NBA for closely, like for a little while, and switching back and forth between hockey and the NBA. Like, right. I would find myself like watching hockey and be like, you can do that because it's hockey. You can touch another player.
Correct.
The NBA, like sometimes a guy doesn't even touch another guy and it's a penalty because it looks like he got touched. It's fucking insane to me how soft they call the NBA for certain players. And then hockey, the Avalanche kind of got screwed by a call that I guess was correct, but didn't affect the play at all and really bullshit ticky-tacky sort of thing. But for the most part, it was like hockey, they let these guys play. The NBA,
especially the playoffs, yeah.
The NBA it's just super regulated by the reffing. It was, I don't know. I found myself not even wanting to watch the game at points.
Well, like if you think about like how the Rockets play basketball, like a huge part of their offense is shooting threes, and either if you miss the three, getting fouled and shooting three free throws, or right, making that three, getting fouled and getting a 4-point play. It's like if the Broncos decided, well, this is kind of the Joe Flacco offense, and just like throwing it up in hopes of getting a pass interference, or it's like throwing a ball, but like purposely, like letting like the right tackle, like letting the defender go by, like throwing the ball, and then like Joe Flacco, like launching himself into the defensive end to draw a roughing the passer call and getting 15 yards either after the play or after an incompletion. Which now that I thought about it, it might be brilliant. Like they might want to start thinking about doing that.
It'd be funny for a quarterback to get flagged for like a legal hit on an edge rusher. Hitting an edge rusher too low.
It's ever going to happen, but yeah.
I want to see a QB fucking hit JJ Watt in the knees and get penalized for it. I'm not saying I want JJ Watt to get hurt, because I think if you say that, that's another thing that can put you into jail.
If you wish ill will to any of the Watt family, they will find you.
Yeah, not only will the law find you, but like the three of them will knock on your door at night.
I would much rather piss off the Watt family than the Bosa family, though. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, the Bosa family would like try to find you, but they like I don't think they could figure it out. The Watt family would find you very quickly.
But I feel like the Watt family would be reasonable.
The Bosas would like knock on the wrong door, I think.
Yeah, they're like the dog, the bounty hunters coming after you. Where the Watt family is like a good, honest police force, and then the Manning family is like the fucking FBI or the CIA.
Yeah, you don't want to get on their bad side because you could just you'd turn up dead, and no one would even know.
You would disappear. Mannings
would not be within the top 100 in terms of suspects.
Yeah. You don't fuck with football royalty. That's all I know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
This is completely off topic, but I was thinking
that was my point.
we should do a video, I think, at some point about why NFL quarterbacks want to have so many kids.
Oh, I like that.
Because Kurt Warner, he has 7 kids as well. So Warner has 7, Fitzpatrick has 7, Flacco has 5, Rivers has 9. And I know – I think
– Rivers has 12. Right?
I think it's 9.
Oh.
9 or 10 now. I don't know. It's hard to keep track. But I feel like there's a correlation between quarterbacks and a ton of kids. And
sex. Just having lots of sex. Unprotected.
Or maybe it's – maybe they just get sex once a year and they make it count.
Could be.
I don't know. It's just an observation. I'm not saying it was a good one, but interesting.
We'll have to discuss it in the next video.
Sure.
I like it. I like the idea. But we have the Jets to talk about.
Let's do it.
Because they fired their general manager, Mike Maccagnan, today. And you know who they named as their interim GM? That's right. Mr. Bulgy Eyes himself. Head coach Adam Gase. What was your reaction when you first saw this?
I thought it was crazy. I don't remember a GM getting fired after the draft and free agency. So my reaction is, why the fuck would you fire your GM right after you just let him basically do the most important things a GM does? Why wouldn't you get rid of him before even he hired Adam Gase? So maybe you would want your new GM and your coach at the same time. And then I think part of the answer, the reason they're getting rid of him is because him and Adam Gase weren't syncing. And Adam Gase didn't want to pay Le'Veon Bell or any running back a ton of money. And they went ahead and did that anyway. And so I guess that's why it happened. It just seems stupid. It just seems really stupid to do it. At this time, I guess maybe better than middle of the season, but I don't know.
It's very strange. It's very strange to let a GM go through this whole offseason process, like you said, to sign Le'Veon Bell. I get the rationale behind not wanting to sign a running back to big money, but if there's any team that could make it work, it's the Jets because they're not. Who else are they paying?
They were one of the top in salary cap money, right?
Right. Yeah. It's not going to come to them having to choose between Sam Darnold and Le'Veon Bell after 3 years. Like, he's getting most of the money within 3 years. You sign Darnold when his contract runs up and he gets the fifth-year option, assuming that they still want him at that point, which is a huge question mark. But the best way to find out is to give him a supporting cast, and who better to help a young quarterback than a running back that can, A, run the ball really well, B, pass block, and C, catch passes coming out of the backfield. And there's maybe one or two players in the NFL that can do that all at the same time better than Le'Veon Bell, so...
Yeah,
I get it in theory, but in this particular case with the New York Jets, I don't have a problem with it. My problem is, why did you guys come to an agreement and not have a plan for what you're going to do in the offseason, to the point where this signing caused such a huge disagreement that basically one of you has to leave town in May.
Long-term, it could speak more to Adam Gase and what his ability is to work functionally within an organization. So it's too early, like, to say for sure, but Adam Gase may have the issue, you know what I mean, getting along with the people he's working around. I know.
Which was kind of like a major complaint in Miami, that he didn't get along with his players, which led to Jay Ajayi being traded, Jarvis Landry leaving.
Right.
Basically, and a whole exodus of skill players.
And him not, you know, like, him and Elway didn't leave on good terms, you know, with the Broncos. So, you know, there could be more to that there. but you're right, like, if it's overpaid, I think it would have to suggest that Adam Gase would disagree with maybe even more personnel decisions that were made than just Le'Veon Bell. Because at some point you just be like, okay, I didn't want to pay a running back that much money, but I'm an offensive-minded coach, and there's a lot I can do with a super talented running back. So,
right.
Okay, I'll deal with having a top three running back in the NFL for the next two seasons. Like, oh shit, what a shitty thing to have to be able to coach and scheme with. So probably there's probably more there, I would assume. Like, if it's just over one player, New York's really fucked. And Adam Gase, I don't know. I think Adam Gase is going to be under a microscope now. And the good news is this takes a lot of heat off the New York Giants, at least for a little bit.
That's a good point. No, they keep grappling for what's the opposite of supremacy? Inferiority.
Yeah. New York. We shall be the bottom.
The Giants look like they had it locked up for a while. You know, obviously the Knicks might have the bottom spot after getting the third pick in the lottery last night. But the Jets saw that and said, we will one-up you, and they fired their GM right after the draft and said, I dare you to do better than this.
Yeah, it's – when I saw it today, like, I normally wouldn't want to talk about a fucking GM getting fired on the podcast because it seems like a really boring thing to talk about. But the timing of this, and with the Jets organization sort of being just kind of – feels just like disarray now. I found it fascinating. Maybe I'm like too deep in the world of football that I find this really intriguing. I don't know, but I thought it was worth spending a little time talking about.
No, it definitely is. I mean, especially now, like, this is, we're getting to the part of the off season where these are like the most exciting stories we're going to have to cover.
Yeah.
Unless like something crazy happens, because like GMs do get fired. I'm like, let's pray that like something exciting happens this offseason. But
you want some, you would like, at this point, you're just waiting for a player to do something really stupid to talk about.
Exactly, like blow their fingers off on the 4th of July, dogfighting. Do you remember the offseason with the Michael Vick dogfighting stuff? That was like, that lasted ESPN maybe 3 months.
Yeah, that was a story that like lasted on the national news media for like regular news, like your CNN type bullshit. Like, that was that's the most insane story that I feel is going to come out of the NFL ever, maybe.
We should play a game eventually where like we set up like a Mad Libs machine for like fake off-season stories, and then just like run like a random generator and then see what off-season storylines the generator comes up with.
That's fair. That would be fun.
Like Joe Flacco loses foot to wild boar attack.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we just riff on that for like 10 minutes because there's no real stories.
No.
Except for like, I don't know, some players in the best shape of his life.
Yeah, that's every player. And every player who's coming back from an injury, whatever that area of his body is injured, it feels stronger than it ever has before.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. It makes sense that right after someone just tore their Achilles into 1,000 pieces, that it would come back much, much better. Stronger. Yeah, prior to it.
Yeah, that
belayed.
That knee always kind of bothered me. I'm glad I got rid of that ACL.
Yeah, it's really quite cumbersome.
It's or I like when players also when they change their diets.
Oh, that's a huge one. Yeah, no,
That's usually for players who are like I feel like after they turn once they get past 30 years old, and they realize like, oh shit, my body doesn't. I can't just put anything in it anymore. Because as somebody who's 35, like, it's very true. But you see older players like, yeah, just started eating healthy. I have a lot more energy, feel better.
It's like, what did you eat before?
Yeah. And now it's
raw sewage.
I was eating candy bars and soda, and I had a secret smoking habit. And
oh, yeah, that's where you get, like,
the fruit by the foot.
Yeah, that's where you get the inevitable quote, where it's like, your body is a luxury car, so why would you not put premium gasoline into it?
I got a Ferrari here, and I need to start feeding the Ferrari it wants, and that is kale. That is
top of the line fuel.
Fucking kale, baby.
That's it.
It's the players, depending on what like college they go to now, they get educated on nutrition very differently. There's a lot of players that come into the NFL who already know, like, oh, yeah, eating healthy is really going to help my performance, just putting the right things in my body. And there are players, like, who go to colleges where, like, those resources aren't available to them. So they're still just putting shit in their body, but they're athletic fucking freaks, so they get by with it. And at some point, somebody in the NFL or other teammates would be like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you could be – feeling so much better if you did these other things, or you can do all the healthy things and still tear your ACL. So
correct, yeah. Or you have like Joel Embiid in the NBA who played 1 year of college basketball at Kansas, and then like despite repeated attempts, basically the Sixers begging him to eat like an apple instead of like 3 bags of McDonald's a day, just refusing to do so, not putting anything even close to organic in his body, and then calling Brett Brown the day before game 6 or 9 hours before game 6 to say, I'm not feeling well, not sure I can play. Maybe your immune system has something to do with your dietary habits. I don't know.
It might. It might.
Putting it out there. We could go on about. We'll save that for the culinary podcast.
When yeah, that
eventually comes up this off season.
Called Will and Brandon in the kitchen
for you with the Jets. So one of the leading candidates is Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network. We obviously saw Mike Mayock, also from the NFL Network, go to the Raiders. Daniel Jeremiah took Mike Mayock's spot as the lead draft analyst. Do you think Daniel Jeremiah is a step up for Mike Mayock? Are you going to criticize the Jets for doing the same thing that the Raiders have done, or kind of ignore it because we love to poke fun at the Raiders? Because I have a pretty specific answer on this, but I'm curious what you think.
I think it's well, as somebody who believes I could be an NFL GM, like,
yeah,
sure, fine.
Of course.
What Daniel Jeremiah, what he has is he was an NFL scout before he got
exactly
what he was doing at the NFL Network. So that's,
yeah.
I think that's in his favor. I think the thing that you can't know about an NFL GM is what their sort of business sense is and their like negotiating sort of skills. I think that's really important in how they work with Because a GM is essentially in charge of like your salary cap and your finances. I don't think a guy like Mike Mayock or Daniel Jeremiah has a sense of how you do that, but their willingness to work with the person who does keep track of the finances is important. So I think the business part of it, the money part of it, are the two things you don't know. And if Daniel Jeremiah shows he has a grasp of those things, it makes sense. But if I'm an NFL owner, I'm probably not looking to the NFL Network to bring in my next GM.
All right, so kind of a follow-up question to that. Would you rather take someone who was a scout, kind of a lower-level guy in front office at the NFL level, or do something like the Broncos did where when they brought in John Elway to be their general manager, he had experience as the general manager of the Colorado Crush, I think it was, the Arena Football League team. Yeah. So would you want someone that has experience like leading people in that type of role, or someone who has experience in a similar level and environment more than that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I probably would go with the LA business sort of sense of it, because I feel like if that person is willing to listen to scouts and that sort of thing. Like, I feel like scouting, there are obviously going to be NFL scouts who are better, and there are things that go into evaluating players, but I feel like you can find those people. But somebody who knows how to run and lead an organization, I think that's a harder skill to find at that level. So that's why, like, Elway worked with the Broncos and had like a weird sort of combination of experience in that he was in the NFL. He did run, you know, the Crush. He had the car dealership businesses. Like, there was experience there with being a leader on the, not, he didn't just play, like, he was a premier player. So then you also get the factor of like, oh, this, having John Elway there brings more attention back to the organization, and just that alone will make the organization more money. Yeah. So I think that I would go with the Elway type guy.
And he's one of those players that near the end of his career is one of those rare players that ascended into that LeBron James kind of tier where they influenced their own team's front office. And they say like, hey, I think it'd be really, you know, helpful if you guys took a look at this guy, this guy, this guy. I think he'd work within our offense, this, that, and the other. Because that, it gives you a sense of like how things work, how the money works, just kind of the ins and outs of a front office that I don't know if you get if you're just a scout.
Yeah.
I mean, I think obviously scouts are important. Because they're, you know, they're doing the legwork and going to colleges and going to like these small schools and talking to guys and calling coaches and calling like high school teachers to get, you know, the scoop on these guys that they're about to draft, and they're invaluable. But I think it's obviously more valuable to have a GM that is smart enough and has the wisdom and experience to say, all right, I'm willing to defer and listen to my scouts, whereas to bring it back to the Raiders and to shit on them one last time, rather than sending them home the day before the draft and taking a late first rounder at fourth overall.
Right. Well, I think the thing that would concern me with like Daniel Jeremiah is like, how old is he?
He's 41.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's old enough, but he looks like a kid to me.
He does, yeah, it's true.
I think something that's really important for an NFL GM is you have to have the confidence to make really tough decisions. And I don't know enough about Daniel Jeremiah to say that I think he would be ready for that.
Yeah, you have to be kind of ruthless.
Yeah, and we can criticize Mike Mayock right now, but I feel like if you just looked at Mayock and Daniel Jeremiah, I feel like I would go with Mike Mayock over him based on, I feel like Mayock's been around long enough where he would have the confidence to make tough decisions, or at least I would feel better about him being able to do that than somebody like Daniel Jeremiah. And that, a lot of that just comes with like life experience too. But, you know, if you look at Elway, like he came in and after one season sent Tim Tebow packing.
Yeah. So
that was not like a popular
decision. No, it wasn't.
Fans, but he knew like this dude is not a quarterback. I got to do this before I even know who my next quarterback's going to be. Before I signed Peyton Manning, like you got to have a guy who can go in there and do that type of shit, I think. And I don't know if a guy who's been talking football on TV just got to my – he wasn't even the number one guy on the NFL Network. I would take Rich Eisen before him. You know what I mean?
Interesting. Interesting.
You know who I wouldn't take ever would be Deion Sanders.
No, he doesn't even – yeah, he'd pass on Kevin Byard in free agency, that's for sure.
Who's the girl who does the the woman who does the, like the numbers analytics?
Oh, yeah, Cynthia Freeland.
Yeah, I would take her. Give me somebody who's thinking about things like that.
Yeah, I have no – like, I'm curious, like, how close her model is to, like, reality. But whenever anyone says, like, they have their own model, I'm immediately impressed. Because I could barely pass pre-calculus, so.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even know how to set up a proper Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah. Fucking twist my brain into a pretzel trying to do long division, so.
You know what I hate about her is, like, I would listen to, like, her predictions. I'm like, that's not – she's not going to be right. And it so many times it was right. Because I'd be watching, like, thinking hopefully they're going to – she's going to say the Patriots will lose or the Broncos will win. And my point prediction says probability here is they will lose. I felt like she was right a lot.
Most likely. The great thing about being like one of those people that predicts every game and has a model is no one has the time or energy to go back and see if you're
That's
right
true.
Or wrong.
That is true.
Another thing about that is like whenever someone brings up win predictions, they always call it like the Pythagorean win total or like the win projection, Pythagorean win projection. And every time I'm like, what the fuck do triangles have to do with anything related to sports?
I don't get it.
You
need Donald Duck playing pool to explain it to you.
Yeah. My simple brain cannot draw any type of relationship between geometry and football right now.
Right. Unless it's like diagramming a play.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, but no, trying to find the length of a third side of the triangle based on the other two sides, how that means the Broncos are going to win 8.3 games this season, I don't get it.
I don't know. Vegas says they win 7. So do you trust Vegas is the same thing as Pythagorean. It sounds like you're like, okay, that's serious.
Yeah. No, they might just be guessing in Vegas for all we know.
When money's involved, they don't guess.
I've seen Casino. I know
that was old Vegas.
How much work they put into it.
That was old, stupid, arrogant Italian Vegas.
Yes. Obviously the new Vegas is not like that at all. You were just there.
Those criminals are way smarter nowadays.
Yes.
I just kept thinking when I was there
anymore, just entrepreneurs.
Yeah. I kept thinking like, how do I build a casino? Because you just make so much money.
Yeah. Where do you get the money also?
Like I should be able to go to my bank and say, look, I'm going to run this casino. It's going to make us a ton of money.
$50 million.
I'll have the loan paid back in 10 years, which is 3 times as fast as I'm paying back my house right now. So
exactly.
Like we've got Black Hawk here in Colorado up in the mountains where you can gamble. Let me open a casino up there. I know how that shit works.
It's just like being an
NFL GM. I just need the chance to shine. Well, need a chance to spread my wings and see how they can I can fly. Was Michael Scott?
How many? Okay, let me ask you this: how many complimentary drinks were you offered over the course of your week at Vegas?
Not a lot, because we didn't gamble that much.
Oh, I was gonna. Yeah, I was gonna say that pretty much directly correlates to how bad of a gambler you are.
Yeah. I lost my money.
Keep spending your money.
I lost my money so fast the first time I sat down to play blackjack that I got pissed. And then I funded my wife with the other money I took out. And what I learned, because we're not gamblers and she's new to it, but we had a woman was the dealer, and they could tell like she was learning. And I feel like they really wanted to help her out because she wasn't some fucking like arrogant dude at the blackjack table who pretends like he knows everything, which there's always like that guy sitting there. There's always a guy telling everybody what to do. But then like she started winning and she played for almost 2 hours the first time and walked away with, I got my money I lost back. So, and I was getting the drinks just by sitting there watching her play. So I think I made it up. I think the two nights that we played, I probably got between 8 and 10 drinks in. So, which would have cost me about what I lost. And then I did better the next night playing roulette. So
8 to 10 drinks, just for clarification, you're in Vegas on Friday. I was at a San Francisco Giants game on Friday. You got 8 to 10 drinks for free. 8 to 10 drinks would have cost me roughly $135.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, if you break even. Drinks,
I mean like 8 ounces of Coors Light.
Yeah. No, because then we would go in to eat, and I would, if I ordered a drink, it was going to be like $16.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you made the right choice.
It's no matter what you do, you're not walking out of there on top unless you're some fucking gambling fiend who knows what you're doing or you got a lot of money to risk.
But you know who gambled and won? Bill Belichick, when he released, when he traded Jamie Collins.
Nice.
And then signed him back.
Jamie Collins going back to the Patriots. That happened today, too.
Ruthless. Absolutely ruthless. We were talking about before the show, you can't help but respect the 40 intergalactic chess that he's playing with his roster.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots, because they keep winning, they can shit on any player they want.
Yeah.
When they don't want to pay them. And then when that player inevitably fails somewhere else, they will gladly take them back, pay them less than what they're worth, and probably get the best production since the last time they were a Patriot.
Okay, yeah. So how many times has this happened? It's happened with I think the first guy it happened to was – Deion Branch, right? They traded Deion Branch to the Seahawks.
Oh, that's right.
And then they signed him back after that as a part of that 2011 team that went to the Super Bowl. They did it with Martellus Bennett, although that didn't really work out in the long run. It feels like they've just done it. I'm trying to think who else, but this Jamie Collins one.
I think we thought they were going to do it with Danny Amendola.
Yeah.
I really thought he was going to end up back there. They convinced Gronk to never go anywhere else, and he played for less than what he was worth.
Mm-hmm. Convinced they arranged the marriage of Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen Tom Brady would take $15 million a year as opposed to $35, so that was smart by them.
That's like, as much as I hate Tom Brady, because I really do.
Yeah, I agree.
The thing I respect most about what he has done is not bought into, I'm the number one quarterback, I need to make the most money. Like his Gisele makes like $100 million every year anyway. So he really doesn't need it, but Aaron Rodgers, his team could really use, you know, the help, but he's maxed out.
Yeah, Danica Patrick doesn't make enough money, apparently.
Nope. Russell Wilson just did it. Peyton Manning did it. Like, And I get why you would. Why not fucking max out as much as you can? But I think, like, Brady, for everything that's stupid and annoying about him, I think he really does, like, he wants to win more than anything. So he's fine making that $15 million.
Right.
Because also, though, because he trusts the organization he's at to bring in players and players to fit, you know, the system and mold into it. Like, a guy that's like Aaron Rodgers probably doesn't trust the Packers to do what he would want them to do with the money that he gives up. You know what I mean? So, like, I get it, but, like, that's the part of the thing that about Brady that I always go, that's, like, the one thing I will give him credit for is he's never asked to max out that money, and the team's always had, like, enough flexibility to kind of do what they needed, whether that's bringing in Darrell Revis, you know, when they did to help put that secondary over the hump, or keeping Stephon Gilmore there, paying him. So it's just like, I don't know, it pisses me off too.
At what point for someone like Brady, though, does winning become profitable enough to break even? Say, if you're taking half of what you're worth on the open market, or not even on the open market, but just in the regular starting quarterback market, because he would be paid top three. In a perfect world where the Patriots aren't paying under the table as well. But at what point does winning Super Bowls, because you took less money and the team was able to build the roster elsewhere, turn into, I get to sell X amount more of these TB12 cookbooks because people are buying into it because I'm winning a Super Bowl at age 41. Versus I'm a celebrity because I've won so many Super Bowls that I get to marry the richest supermodel in the world, versus, you know, I get all these prestigious endorsements. At some point, it's like maybe he makes more money because he takes less money.
No, that's fair.
In his regular day-to-day salary.
Maybe that, you know, that's why he's so motivated to sell TB12, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
it makes him a better businessman.
It makes sense.
Yeah, I hope I can answer that question one day from a place of personal knowledge.
Yeah, I see you decided to take less from YouTube in order to spin it into multiple endorsements.
That's right.
Yeah.
I have made enough money. I just want to keep winning.
I just shovel it into a fireplace every night to keep myself warm. Piles and piles of cash.
Yeah. Have you watched that movie on Netflix, Triple Frontier?
No, I haven't. The one with Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, it's terrible. I watched it on the plane. And
I was gonna watch it.
At one point, the guy burned some money to stay alive, so it made me think of you.
Wow, that's like a, it's almost like it's like a really ham-fisted metaphor for something.
Yeah.
It is, because I'm not smart enough.
The movie is so stupid.
Oh, it sounds great. I'm probably going to turn it on after this then.
And the action's not even like cool enough to carry it. But when you got time and you want to be disappointed.
Your beloved Netflix comes out with another tremendous original, I guess.
Yeah, dude, the writing's so – it's so – anyway. Yeah, Jamie Collins. Let's get into Broncos news, I guess.
Yeah.
We already made the Joe Flacco video.
We did.
I'm glad we did. Yeah. Because
I am too. I love the title, by the way.
Yeah, I think that's helping it perform because it's doing
it's really fear-mongering. Well. I love it. It's clickbait. It's fear-mongering. It's just extremist journalism.
Yeah. We did it right, though, because – the title of the video is Joe Flacco Hates Drew Lock and Hope He Fails in the NFL. But now, it's got a 96% like ratio, which is a little under normal. So there are some people clicking on it thinking, oh, what did Flacco say? And then they find out, oh, I already heard that.
Can't believe he would say all of that.
But this video is a good example of me – because we were working on finishing the Raiders offseason recap, And then I just texted Will. I was like, you want to do a quick video about this stupid Joe Flacco news story? Because Joe Flacco, during a press conference, basically they asked him if it was his job to mentor Drew Lock, and he was like, I don't think I get paid to mentor, you know, anyone. Like, my goal here is to win football games. I'm focused on learning a new offense and all this stuff myself. And like, even like the way like he answered the question, like he went about it as like nicely as you could. It wasn't, I don't know. The tone was, I thought, like, pretty open spirited.
Yeah.
Very normal. But because he said it's not his job to mentor Drew Lock, like, it turned into a story everywhere. It's on Pro Football Talk. It's on the NFL Network. Every Denver media news outlet has a headline about it. And it's like the type of shit I think Will and I hate is a story that's not there that gets made into one.
Yeah, completely manufactured because it's that time of year again.
Right. So we wanted to just make fun of that in the video. And then we actually kind of, I thought, stumbled upon something in that good quarterbacks, like,
how many of them had a great mentor?
Right. It's none. And the guys who went and played behind, like the Aaron Rodgers and the Steve Youngs, like Brett Favre and Joe Montana did not want those guys to be there.
No.
And while they were probably cordial and they probably taught those people stuff inadvertently, none of them were out there going like the extra mile to mentor them to play the game. And I never really like jumped into that, because when Peyton Manning was here and the Broncos drafted Brock Osweiler, it was like, it's great. Brock Osweiler can learn behind Peyton Manning for a couple of years. You're not going to fucking learn anything unless you're out there like playing the game. You're okay. You will learn a little bit, but
yeah, it is better than doing nothing.
being a good quarterback has very little to do with what another quarterback teaches you in that room. It's so many other factors. We kind of talked about it, but I just thought it was a interesting thing to sort of kind of run and talk about.
Yeah, no. I was looking into like who was a great quarterback that had a like supposedly strong mentor behind him, because John Elway didn't have one. Steve DeBerg. Joe Montana also had Steve DeBerg. Maybe Steve DeBerg is just an all-time mentor and we don't know about it, but I kind of doubt it. I feel like it's probably coincidence at this point. Dan Marino had David Woodley, who was not very good. Even got like Drew, I was like the best one I could think of was like Tom Brady had Drew Bledsoe, I guess. Drew Brees had Doug Flutie. Maybe it is good to have like a very short role model to look down to, like Doug Flutie. but I can't, like, Curtis Painter was Peyton Manning's mentor, or Peyton Manning, like, supposedly mentored guys like Curtis Painter, Jim Sorgi, Brock Osweiler, all those guys. And, you know, I don't think it really means anything. Like, Brian Griese's mentor was supposedly John Elway, too, in his last year.
Yeah, well, Peyton Manning knew none of those guys would ever take his job.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't
Brett Favre and Joe Montana could see that they had a really good quarterback sitting behind them.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, if you're a good quarterback and another good quarterback walks onto your team, you're going to fucking notice that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I thought the other thing that was funny was that Joe Montana had back injuries, and that's like exactly what Joe Flacco had. But I watched this clip of Steve Young talking about, because Bill Walsh like told him that, you know, Montana wouldn't come back from the second back surgery. And Steve Young goes, I remember looking at Bill Walsh at practice and Walsh just going like, sorry, dude, couldn't have predicted this.
My bad.
But those situations too, like those are the only time that shit's ever happened.
Yeah.
Except for maybe like the closest thing would be the Chargers drafting Philip Rivers, but that's because they were too stupid to realize what they had with Drew Brees. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Drew Brees wasn't completely Drew Brees yet at that point. So it's rare. And I think Broncos fans will be lucky if Drew Lock is a great quarterback. playing behind Joe Flacco. And we'll be lucky if Joe Flacco plays really well. And the issue is, like, when do we move on from Flacco? Like, that's what you want. You want Elway to have to think about moving on from Joe Flacco. Completely the opposite of how long he had to think about moving on from Case Keenum.
Right. It's like, also, like, what do you think Joe Flacco is going to teach Drew Lock that the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator couldn't teach him? Like, Joe Flacco is going to tell him, hey, you should be able to throw a ball 80 yards like me. And then Drew Lock's like, oh, I can only throw it 75 yards.
Well, I guess you'll never win a Super Bowl.
Well, here's how you throw it 5 yards further.
Yeah, it's like,
and then they can each throw it out of the stadium.
The thing is, like, I think Joe Flacco will give him information and tips, and they're going to happen just organically.
Right, right.
Like during a game when Joe Flacco comes to the sideline to talk to Rich Scangarello and Drew Lock sitting there, like, Joe Flacco's going to be like, I'm seeing this thing happen on the defense. Like, the defense of, I don't know, the safety is cheating every play. We need to take advantage of this thing. So it's like Drew Lock's going to see the way he's processing shit in, like, a situation like that. So he is going to teach him things, but, like, not going out of his way to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this isn't like being a quarterback and having a rookie quarterback under your wing isn't like signing up for, like, a big brother program. Right. Like, you drive a kid to, like, a baseball game and buy him a soda and like, tell him how to talk to girls.
Yeah.
It's just, like, it's – the onus is absolutely on Drew Lock to learn. If a quarterback's not willing to learn or just doesn't have, like, the capacity to learn, which I think is, like, the main complaint people had about Paxton Lynch, like, it's just not going to happen either way. And if a quarterback is willing to learn – and puts in the time and the effort, it doesn't matter who the guy is in front of them because they're going to learn one way or another.
Right. It's – I think, like, Joe Flacco probably right now too has a weird sort of rep because Lamar Jackson was drafted
That's a good point. Is like, this is the second year in a row that Joe Flacco's had to answer these questions. He's probably pretty tired of it.
Yeah, and I think that – the thing that might help Drew Lock is Lock is a similar quarterback to Joe Flacco. Lamar Jackson, completely different style of player.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, and I read some things about, like, how much Joe Flacco actually did help Lamar Jackson. But maybe, like, I think it's a little bit more natural too if you see something in yourself in somebody else. And you're more naturally inclined to kind of help that person, you know what I mean? As opposed to, like, somebody who comes in that you're like, this guy is tremendous athlete, does things that I can't do. Whereas, like, Drew Lock's like, this is a guy probably throw the ball the way I do, is going to handle situations similarly. So I'll probably pass on nuggets to him. Just by virtue of seeing that sort of similarity. Like, Lamar Jackson's it's a crazy different type of quarterback. It's a different situation, but.
And, like, when people talk about learning under Peyton Manning, I feel like learning under Peyton Manning, sure, you're going to pick up a lot. But, like, the thing that makes Peyton Manning as good as he is, like, he has just a ridiculous intellect, which you can't teach. Like, the ability to just pick up on things super quickly and to process things super quickly. I think it's mainly God-given. And you can't learn work ethic. Like, you can see, like, what it takes, but, like, you still have to do it. You still have to put in that time and effort. And there's very few players that are actually willing to take that step and go above and beyond.
Yeah, I think maybe the most important thing you can sort of take away if you're a young quarterback playing behind a veteran is observing – if they're doing it well, how they lead. And every person's going to have a different leadership style. But I think that's like watching how they command the huddle, watching how they hold other players accountable, and learning that once you're the starting quarterback, you're going to be expected to do those same things. And I don't think that's like a natural thing for people to be able to do. You know what I mean? Or that it doesn't come naturally to everyone. And I feel like as I've gotten older, looking back at what I was doing, say 10 years ago in the same profession that I'm in, I'm like, shit, if I knew like what I know now or was able to observe somebody doing what I wanted to do then, I would have been able to handle situations far better or had more confidence to be like a leader in situations where I needed to be that type of person, but I didn't have the experience. And so when you see somebody else doing it, I think it can give a young guy confidence to go in there and command a team. Because like, I don't care who you are, if you're a 22-year-old man drafted to be if you're Will's age, you're asking all of these other grown men to
and also in the NFL like me.
Yeah. Or having to like call out a 32-year-old veteran, like if he's not doing what you want him to do, and you have to get him to believe
really
that you're right and follow you, and not like just being like the way I felt like Brock Osweiler was kind of like trying to be this rah-rah guy sometimes, and it was just like nobody was like buying it until he came back the second time. And then they're like, now this guy's got it.
Or like, I mean, like people just don't buy it until you play well too.
Yeah, you have to.
It's really hard to be
good at your job.
No one's going to call like. I mean, someone like Nathan Peterman might be the greatest leader in the NFL for all we know, but no one's going to like call him a great leader or really follow his lead because he's just not good on the field. Right. Like, that's what it comes down to. Like people will follow your lead if you produce on the field, which I think obviously leading by example is.
Yeah.
Probably the best, most important way to lead. But I also don't want people to take this as us saying that Drew Locke should just play from day one, because I think those are two different things.
Right.
It doesn't mean like he has to, like the only way he can learn is on the field. I think it does help, obviously, to just spend a year learning an offense and learning routines and learning like how to exist in the NFL. Without having to actually play on Sundays for, you know, a full season before you actually do get to start. It's different for everybody. Like, I think Drew Locke is one of those players that would benefit from being a backup for a year while he cleans up some mechanical things. But I wouldn't say the same thing about Dwayne Haskins. Like, I'd say Dwayne Haskins should probably start right away, I think. Kyler Murray should probably start right away.
It's every situation, every player is different there too.
Yeah.
And sometimes the player who should sit a year gets drafted to a place where he has to start right away.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it doesn't work out. Like another thing I noticed from, you know, when Steve Young was talking about being in San Francisco, he's like, I wouldn't have gone there if I knew Montana was going to have 4 years left in him, you know, to play. Like I wanted to be on the field. He's like, I thought about quitting football because I wasn't out there playing. So some people are ingrained with that sort of mentality. But also you have to be confident in your own ability to go out there and do that. Like for me, like if I were a college quarterback getting drafted in the NFL, like I know myself well enough where I would have wanted to be drafted where I knew I wasn't going to have to start right away. Like, I need to acclimate to this new situation. I need to absorb all this shit because if they ask me to go out there and be the fucking hero from day one, we are all going to be our jobs are all going to be gone in it.
It's like Teddy Bridgewater staying with the Saints rather than going to Miami and starting, which he could have done. It's like, well, obviously, you know, I signed with the Saints thinking that Drew Brees probably had a year left. Ended up having a great season. Doesn't seem like he's going to retire even like after, maybe he retires after this year. Probably more likely 2 years. But then once that happens, sure, I spent 3 years as a backup. But then I get to take over, you know, one of the more ideal situations in the NFL as opposed to the Dolphins, who maybe had a, you know, skeptical he was skeptical of their coaching situation, and they didn't have the same level of skill position players, and you know, they have the 31st ranked offensive line in the NFL, and all these different factors. Like, maybe I don't want to put myself in a position where I'm going to fail, but I get to play, and I'd rather just wait a couple more years and be in, you know, an ideal situation.
If Bridgewater did go to Miami, do you think the Saints would have been interested in, say, Josh Rosen?
These are the glorious what-ifs of the NFL.
Because that's, I mean, I feel like Josh Rosen is going to fail in his career because he went from one bad organization to another one. And I don't think Josh Rosen is the type of player who can, like, turn a terrible organization into a good one.
Right, because there are so few of those.
That's what's really, like, when you look at a guy like Peyton Manning or John Elway or Dan Marino, they went into situations where the team was not good, and they changed everything about the fate of that franchise and organization.
Well, I'll say, Manning especially. Like, I think Elway joined, like, a pretty mediocre team.
No, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, Marino joined a team that was, I think, in the Super Bowl the year before.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
I guess Marino just was good his entire career.
He was pretty good. I would put Andrew Luck in that conversation as well. I think he's the only one recently that has been so good that he's transcended their entire fortune as a team and
take next,
a bad roster and made a good team out of it.
The next guy might be Baker Mayfield that you say that about.
Right. Because, yeah, no, it might be.
Like, he went to the perennially worst team in the NFL for, you know, as long as anybody can fucking count.
Right.
And their fortunes started to change, and he was obviously a big part of it. Russell Wilson, close maybe in that conversation, but the Seahawks, I felt like as an organization, did a great job.
Yeah, he kind of got there at the right time.
Right. But I think he has the right mentality to be that sort of guy, but that's exactly like, I think.
Well, I mean, we saw it last year. It wasn't a very talented Seahawks team, but he played well enough to carry them to the playoffs.
Right. It's what we've been saying. It's like, there's so much pressure, I think, to try to do that as a very, very young man. Like, it's a ton of responsibility. It takes a tremendous amount of crazy athletic QB talent and crazy amount of confidence to have, like, the balls just to fucking do that shit. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not for everyone.
Anyway, I think that's enough.
I think we're good.
Cool. We really did this podcast.
We did it.
We did it hard. Okay, yeah. Make sure you subscribe.
Yeah, should we give people a preview of the next couple of teams we're going to look at in our videos?
Oh, yeah. Starting with the Cleveland Browns. We're definitely doing the Browns.
Yep.
The Jets and Giants, I feel like we got a hit.
They feel pretty mandatory right now. You got a lot of Bengals comments.
I don't know what that was about. I feel like it was a joke that blew up, but
that's also not the most interesting team to talk about right now.
No, I don't want to do the Bengals at all. Yeah. But I'll put another poll up and see if it gains traction. I think, which team do you want to do, Will?
Good question. I think we could talk about, let's see, I think Washington would be interesting to talk about just because of all their quarterback stuff going on.
Yeah.
I think Seattle's vaguely interesting just because Doug Baldwin just retired.
Yeah. It's like, I think we're in the same boat where we want to talk about the teams where it feels like a good amount of interesting things have happened. Right. Like, I want to talk about the Colts because I think they're building on something, but they were not an interesting team this offseason.
No, they didn't really do a whole lot with a ton of resources, which I don't think that's a bad move. It's just not a particularly interesting one either.
No, even like the Raiders are super interesting because,
yeah,
I mean, they did a ton. But we also said like it was not fun researching and trying to talk about the Raiders.
Yeah.
It was not fun. Some not episodes really. Are. Also, I should say the Chiefs episode is gaining steam on the Broncos episode.
Well, yeah, I'm, at this point, I think more Chiefs fans watch us than anyone else,
I know,
for whatever reason.
I think they're
masochists.
I think they are, but I think they get like. I mean, the thing I've always done is I'll shit on the Patriots, but I never don't give them credit.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to take away credit every chance I get for Tom Brady, but
mm-hmm.
part of that's like tongue in cheek. The Chiefs, they have a good quarterback. You can't argue that.
They have a good quarterback only because Alex Smith taught him how to be a good quarterback.
That's right. That was the one we forgot to talk
about.
Alex
Smith taught him how to throw left-handed. Alex Smith taught him how to not look at the receiver when he threw passes. And Alex Smith taught him how to throw the ball 200 miles per hour.
Alex Smith is so good at being a mentor, he has lost his job twice by his mentee.
Yes. Alex, yeah. Alex, maybe mentor yourself for a little bit.
Alex Smith is a...
needs to mentor his leg.
Yeah.
Get back to 100%.
He's a guy I root for.
Absolutely.
Never a flashy quarterback.
Nope.
Never really got the credit he deserved, but never did anything to so great that you had to give him the credit. But the thing I always liked the most about Alex Smith was sneaky athletic. You always forget that he could run. Like every time, like I was like, because he just looks like a slow quarterback, and then he pulls out like a 20-yard fucking first down.
It's because he's from Utah. He probably doesn't like drink or anything.
Oh,
his
smart.
Body just in pristine shape still.
Wasn't
aside from that, like the obvious part.
Wasn't putting that bullshit in his body his whole life.
Nope.
All right. Thanks for listening. We did it.
You made it.